Thanks for joining us. This is Consider This. I'm Ibrahim Sani.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
So, earlier we've heard a few phone calls from MPs as well as Ben Sufian. Now, we just want to focus a little bit about the ongoings that are currently happening over at the Bersatu headquarters. If we can just up this particular visual, it's about this particular meeting that has just ended right now. No statements have been made by Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. We can up this sound a bit. So the ongoings are currently still taking place. Tan Sri Muhyiddin might issue a comment. We don't know the build-up of Bersatu. Is it still Bersatu or it has been berpecah? Here to discuss this and more is, of course, our expert, not just from terms of legality aspect, but of course, commentator on the political scene, Faisal Muhyiddin. He's the lawyer, managing partner of Muhyiddin and Max. Faisal, thanks again for coming all the way to our studio. It's very late into the evening. Let's break down into what you have seen so far through the day and what you think will happen tomorrow.
I think the first thing that will happen right now is that we all need to catch our breath. It has been a roller coaster 24 hours. I think yesterday we saw there was not much information that has arrived for the public consumption, so the public basically didn't know what was going on. And today, if you ask me, honestly, I do not think there has been that much information as well, other than the fact that the Prime Minister has resigned and has since been reappointed as the interim Prime Minister. And there are now allegations of various factions, treachery, so on and so forth. We have yet to hear anything from Tun Mahathir on this point. There were allegations about meeting that has happened with Tun Mahathir and what was said during that meeting. So we have not heard anything concrete at this point, but now the allegations are ongoing. So I think we need to catch our breath first. Tomorrow will be a much more interesting day.
I mean, as a lawyer, I mean, one of the things that have been said, Faisal, is that this is an unprecedented moment in Malaysian constitutional history. We have an interim prime minister. We've never had one as such. And so the question is the lack of a kind of end term for this. I mean, in some sense, Tun Mahathir can go on forever, potentially, as interim prime minister. I mean, is that something that concerns you?
Well, I think it does, because you're absolutely correct there. Right now, we are on uncharted waters. That's where we are at this point. And usually, if you have an interim prime minister, it is generally after a general election. But this is not the case here. And usually, you would have a situation like this where a ruling prime minister has lost majority. Then what will happen? Either that prime minister will resign, someone else will take over, or we would have a general election. But again, that's not the case here. Tun Mahathir resigned with full support. In fact, until today, all the parties are saying they support Tun Mahathir. Yet he has resigned and he is now the interim prime minister. Now, my concern arises mainly from this fact. I think Prof. Shad today wrote an article in The Star, which I was reading on the way here. He was of the view that in the event that a coalition cannot be cobbled up, then perhaps a fresh election can be called. I'm not so sure in instances of an interim government, because the provision of the Constitution, Article 43.2, speaks about appointment of a Article 43.2 speaks about appointment of the Prime Minister. Now, once he is appointed, it has to be someone who commands the confidence of the House. Now, where he doesn't command the confidence of the House, and he is now, at this point, an interim Prime Minister, my concern is whether or not this interim Prime Minister can carry out the function such as requesting for a snap election.
Yeah.
So I want to bring in whether he can go to the Agong and say, please dissolve, dissolve Parliament and let's call
for election. So the whole day today, we've been talking about 43 too. Here to discuss this and more is Lim Wee Jiat. He's the Secretary General of HACAM, or National Human Rights Society. Wee Jiat, what do you think of this particular provision that has again been discussed throughout the station the whole day, as well as including this evening? Do you consider this to be an important element to examine, whether or not we can actually interpret this as such, or is there another element to this? It has, again, it's never been tested before.
I think an interim prime minister is something that is permitted by the constitution. I think it was very wise for the Yang Lee Kuan Agong to appoint an interim prime minister. Having said that, interim prime minister shouldn't make major policy decisions. They should steady the ship, but they should not chart any drastic change in direction. That's all I can say for now.
When you say should, are you reaching to just common sense, Wee Jiat? Are you talking about convention? What exactly is this should coming, or where exactly is your should coming from?
It comes from convention. So there are caretaker governments, you know, when parliament is dissolved in any Commonwealth country today. And caretaker governments, they are limited in powers conventionally. Of course, there's nothing legally binding them, but all Commonwealth countries adhere to a certain code of ethic and conduct called the Constitutional Convention, and we will expect Malaysia to adhere by the same.
Wee Jiat, when we talk about command or enjoys the support of the Dewan Rakyat, are we really talking about 112 MPs putting their hand up and saying, I'm supporting you, or it's just a show of voice, show of force that says, you know, this group of people is supporting me in general and therefore I have enjoyed that kind of majority support? Which one is it?
It's not necessary to go back to Parliament to get that particular support. As in Sabah, for example, statutory declarations are deemed sufficient for the governor to, you know, dismiss Musa Aman and elect Shafi Abdallah as the chief minister. So there are many precedents in the past whereby the court has said that you can have other external evidence to show that a particular person commands the confidence of the majority. You don't need to go back to Parliament. But of course, ethically and morally, the best method is to go back to Parliament in March, have a vote of confidence or no confidence, to elect the new Prime Minister. That's what I think should be done.
You know, this is very interesting because the statutory declaration, I think, is a word that everybody, or expression everybody, should know by now. What we've heard of, or it seems to suggest, that sometimes an MP might have signed two statutory declarations, so they were two SDs. So the question of the weight of an SD now is somewhat diminished by the reality of MPs signing more than one SD. What do you make of that?
Well, I think ultimately it's up to the wisdom of Yang Lee Kuan Agong. You should really scrutinize those SDs. You could probably call that particular person to confirm that he is indeed supporting person A and not person B. I think it all goes back to the wisdom of the Yang Lee Kuan Agong. That's how our constitution was designed, to give the royalty that kind of discretion to choose who he believes commands confidence of the majority of the house.
Wee Jiat, we have to wrap you up. Thanks very much for joining us. That was Lim Wee Jiat, the Sec Gen of HACAM, National Human Rights Society. Faisal, what do you think of that particular statement?
Well, by and large, I agree. But again, when you asked me earlier about concern, and I think Wee Jiat said the same thing. He said an interim prime minister should not make major decision. Is dissolving parliament a major decision?
It is. It's as the major decision ever.
If it is, then the question right now is whether or not Tun Mahathir, as an interim prime minister, if a coalition could not be cobbled up, has the right to ask the YDPA to dissolve a parliament which he now controls only by way as an interim prime minister.
Well, I think, just to clarify, I think Wee Jiat meant policy decisions, not a procedural one. So when he calls and asks the Agong for the dissolution of parliament, it's a procedural call, and it's one that will resolve the problem. To say that the Prime Minister can't ask the Agong to dissolve Parliament the interim Prime Minister would be to handcuff him and make him unable to move forward.
Well, no, I don't agree in that sense. I think, well, Prof Shad is of the view that that is possible, but again, we are on in uncharted waters here, so we really don't know whether that is something that is possible or not. And you made the reference, Sharad, to say that these are policy decisions.
No, I'm saying that. Wee Jiat was saying that he shouldn't be making major policy decisions, but what you were referring to when you call for a dissolution of Parliament
is a procedural
issue.
Yes, but again, this is about dissolving the Parliament. You know, I think there could not be any bigger issue than dissolving a parliament, which was a mandate given by the people. Now, this is why it's peculiar, because Tun Mahathir could have gone to Yang di-Pertuan Agong today and
but the interim prime minister does not get his mandate from the general election. The general election gave a mandate to the Pakatan Harapan government,
which is non-existent.
Yeah, well, and the interim prime minister today gets his mandate from Yang Berduang Agong, right?
Yes.
So it's a very different kind of situation, isn't it?
Yes, but the government that was given the mandate by the people is no more. You see, so I understand where you're coming from. But herein lies the difficulty. It's uncharted waters. The government that was given by mandate by the people is no more. Then now there is a question. An interim prime minister who hasn't lost support but became an interim prime minister arising out of his resignation, whether or not he still commands that authority to go and ask for dissolution of the parliament if a coalition cannot be cobbled up. Now, it is interesting because if you look at the situation, what happens normally is that after a general election, if a coalition cannot be cobbled up, a minority government may be appointed. So I wonder whether this could be one of those situations where a minority government would come in place. And again, today I was reading about, after the resignation of the Prime Minister, I think some of the news portals said there's now a minority government. There's none. Actually, there's no government. The moment the Prime Minister tenders his resignation, the entire cabinet is dismissed with him, since Yang di-Pertuan Agong has accepted the resignation. But again, I agree, Yang di-Pertuan Agong was very wise in appointing Tun Mahathir as the interim prime minister, because of course in the interim we need the leaders. But now the question is, if a coalition cannot be cobbled up, give it time. In Belgium we have seen 541 days. In Netherlands we have seen X number of days being taken just to cobble up in a coalition. In some of the Western democracies, we don't really see a formal coalition. But if it cannot be cobbled up, after all that, what happens? That's my question.
Well, cobbling together a coalition, yeah, is a political act. Do you think the Prime Minister would have done better by the Malaysian people to have, in fact, called for the Agong to dissolve Parliament, go back, fresh elections, find out the strength of the various parties before the next stage of Malaysia's development as a democracy proceeded? Do you think that would have been a better solution?
That would have been a more definitive solution. Then we wouldn't be in a state of limbo. We wouldn't be guessing. We wouldn't be asking what are the powers of an interim prime minister. We wouldn't be wondering what kind of coalition that will be hammered up. Now, here's the question. I mean, I look back at the comments by YB Fahmi Fazil, for example. He's talking about reforms. Reform is very catchy, a catchphrase, right? But what is it really? Now, are you telling me that if PKR, for example, today, and DAP is able to form a coalition with UMNO, they wouldn't do it? I mean, these are the questions, these are the options that we have no say in. As the rakyat, we have no say in, and we are leaving it in the hands of the politician. So to answer your question, yes, if Tun Mahathir were to have requested for a dissolution, and of course I say this with due deference to Yang di-Pertuan Agong's power under Article 42, where he can refuse such a dissolution, I say this with due deference to that. But if it was requested and it was granted, then we would have a more definitive answer, and perhaps much more quickly than trying to hope that the coalition, one, will be cobbled up, and two, what kind of level of happiness are you think that the people are going to have if they see the coalition doesn't really fit into their perhaps reform agenda? You know,
right.
So there are many issues here.
Look, there's viewers right now at home wondering the same questions that we are all asking right now. What can we do? There's 30 million of us, and certainly we are stronger than 222 people that are currently residing in Dewan Rakyat. What can I do right now to make it work for me and the 29 million others like me?
I think there's some NGOs which they have already issued statements saying that perhaps an election should be called. We don't know whether the politician will take heed to that, because this is what will happen. If an election is called, the coalition that we see right now, even whatever fragments that we have right now, may not remain the same. People will realign, the politicians will realign, and will perhaps come up with a new coalition for the election.
Do you think this is part of Malaysia's political education? That we've had 60 years of authoritarian rule, fairly stable coalitions that are permanent in nature, like the Barisan National Alliance before that, that today Malaysia is entering a new norm when it comes to democracy. We're having to learn as a people that perhaps there's going to be a lot more fluidity and we're going to have to make our choices based on that new fact.
Well, if we talk about democracy, then we have to be prepared for things like this. It will happen. But again, I go back to the question of, do we want this to happen frequently? Now, we have to look back at evolution of history in terms of why are we here at this state today? Mm. You know, the main problem, if you were to ask me, is that we condone crossovers. Now, people talk about Pakatan Harapan keeping its form, mandate from the people. But Pakatan Harapan, soon after it won the election, has practically almost lost that shape they were before that election. They said, this is us, before the election, give us the mandate. After the election, they became something else.
Dramatically different in your view?
Well, it's not dramatically different, but of course you see people from the previous government joining into the Pakatan Harapan. Now, these are things...
The untainted members of the previous generation.
Well, again, that's relative.
Let me be frank here. I mean, they didn't enter Amanah, they didn't enter DAP, they didn't enter PKR, they entered Bersatu. Bersatu started off in the teens, in the representative. Somehow or other, they grew to 26 by today. So it's actually Bersatu that has been...
Well, I'm not sure about the status of Saleh Keruak, though, whether he actually entered PKR or not. There was some issue, some concern that he may have. But there was just radio silence. We heard nothing about it since, and we have not heard from Saleh Keruak as well. So I think, while you are right, but it's also a question that we have to look at and look at it pragmatically, because the politicians, at the end of the day, they will just be concerned about their numbers. But what is it that we must do? That is what I think is important. I don't know how to answer you when you say what is it that we must do today.
Yeah.
Perhaps we can voice our concern and get the politicians to get their act together, come up with a workable coalition and move on. But
Wajid just now mentioned about Sabah, of how the quarrel between past and present chief ministers has happened in 2018. There's also Perak that happened a few years ago in the previous parliament, the 13th parliament. From these two examples, I kind of agree with you that we're condoning, you know, party hoppers and many others. Would the reform agenda that, you know, people like Fahmi Fazil, many others are trying to push forward must include issues like party hopping? Is this something that we really have to examine in order for us to avoid this from happening in the future?
Well, we should, but whether we will, I doubt it. Because I think if you were to ask me, the Perak incident started off actually not in 2009, it started off in 2008 when Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, for example, said that he had 30 MPs from BN ready to cross over, and he was saying that the Barisan National Government at that time should not stop the change of government from happening. That's a crossover. Now,
well, the crossover that was promised but didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
But I don't want to ask you this. I mean, it seems that many democracies around the world have had to deal with the problem of party hopping, and there's no resolution to it because, in many ways, voters don't vote for the party. You vote literally for the person who's standing as a candidate, right? And you expect them, you know, to the extent that you can, to be consistent in their behavior. But if they don't, then you punish them at the next election. Parliamentary democracies aren't based on party systems, aren't they?
Well, ideally they shouldn't. But can we seriously say in Malaysia, for example, it is not based on party system? Because always when we vote here, we vote based on the party. We want to give a particular party that we support the win. So really the candidates don't matter. You know, we have MP for Loh Goo Burn. I don't know whether you remember.
Yeah, Kelana Jaya.
He was appointed. He was elected.
Because he had a great video. Correct.
So again, I think at the end of the day, politicians are the way they are because we allow them to be. So if we were to talk about what we want from our politicians, then yes, you are right. We have to educate our voters and we must not condone the politicians who misbehave. I think that's very important because ultimately they are supposed to serve the people, not serve their political interests, not serve their political survival. So I think we have to get this right. And today what we are seeing is precisely that.
Mac, I agree with you. There's not one thing that I disagree with you. And I thought The public has done that in the 14th general election. This guy I don't like, I vote him out. That guy I don't like, I vote him out. And then we have this. How do we, you know, aspire, achieve the aspirations that you just said? Because I thought we did enough.
Well, I think what we need to do, and this is what where I would agree with Sharad here, he's saying that in mature democracy, you should vote for the candidate. That's exactly what we should do. We must punish the candidates who misbehave at the next general election, you know. But at the same time, I do not have an answer how is it that we can solve the problem now, because I think we must also be concerned that the longer this takes, it's going to affect our economy, it's going to affect the normal people on the street.
From the legal aspect.
Yeah, but you know, look, mature democracies produce all kinds of hideous results. Donald Trump, Boris Johnson, just to name a few.
Well, but depending on which side of the fence you are.
I do want to ask you, though. What are the lessons that we should learn from this? I mean, if there's no, you know, simple doing something at this point in time, what should the general populace learn from this particular crisis?
Well, I think what we should learn from the particular from this crisis would be is that we must hold all of our politicians to the same standard. We cannot cut them some slack just because they carry the flag that we are aligned to or we support. We can't do that. You know, that's being hypocritical. So we must cut across the party lines and make sure that we hold all politicians to account equally. Then perhaps the politicians will realise that they should not behave in a certain manner. Any one of us sitting here, are we able to say or prepared to say what is happening right now is because for the benefit of the rakyat? Are we able to seriously say that? We can't. And that's the tragedy of what we thought we have ushered in, reform. Where is that reform? It's in our hearts, it's our mind, but apparently it's not being...
It's in many pamphlets, and in fact, I think there's a whole book, 160 pages worth of it.
It's catchy. It's a catchphrase. It's a reform, but no one really knows what it is.
Okay, before we go for a break, I just want to ask you a few options that are currently immediately in front of us as the rakyat, as well as the options that are available for this group of people. Is PM8, anybody within PM8, going to be elected in the near term, in the next few days even?
Honestly, I don't know, because we have seen examples from countries like the UK, we have seen examples from Germany, we have seen example from Netherlands, we have seen example from Belgium. It could take 2 days, it could take 5 days, it could take 5 months. Mm. But how long do we wait? Mm. Can we afford to wait? That's the bigger question, I think. And unfortunately, I apologize. For that, I have no answer.
Yeah.
How long it will take? That is something that the politicians must answer. But are they prepared to answer, having put us in this situation in the first place?
Of course not. They're pretty silent the past few days. That's the worst
exactly.
part. That was our conversation with Faisal Mohideen, the lawyer and managing partner of Mohideen & Max. After this, we're going to have Bridget Welsh as well as Zaid Ibrahim on this show. Don't go anywhere.